Powered by volunteer community involvement, this is CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.
CKUW 95.9 FM. Bikini Drive-In's mission is to analyze horror and science fiction films through an intersectional feminist lens while combining elements of screen and media studies, arts criticism, and gender studies. Since we'll be discussing portrayals of horror and violence, content warning and listener discretion is advised, etc. Also, spoilers ahead. Today I'm joined again by artist and curator Mahalik Cuff. Thank you so much for being on the show again. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I'm so excited. Oh, I love coming and talking about stuff and talking about movies specifically and just like completely just like taking them apart, making fun of them, but also be like, oh, that was a good thing, you know?
Yeah, it's great. Mahalik Cuff is an emerging artist who produces their work through digital and film still photography, as well as audio recordings. They explore subjects of healing, memory, collective care, and existence to question relationships between kin and the relationship they have with themselves. She's also a community organizer and founder of the group Justice for Black Lives Winnipeg, where she advocates for abolition and safety for all Black people. She has curatorial experience with being involved with Patterns Collective and co-curating work for Window Winnipeg for the exhibition called Joy is More Than Just a Feeling. Their work has been shown locally and nationally as well. Today we are discussing the 1996 film, The Craft.
To the other kids at St. Bernard Academy, they were the girls who didn't belong.
Whatever you do, stay away from them.
Why?
They're witches.
But after years of being on the outside...
Why'd you lie about me?
I don't want to go out with you again. Please, stop begging. It's pathetic.
Four girls are about to discover the dark side.
You ever heard of invoking the spirit?
Black magic.
We can make things happen. I mean, this is it. This is real.
Columbia Pictures welcomes you to the witching hour.
Check it out, her spell is working.
Sit.
Watch out for those weirdos.
We are the weirdos, mister.
The Craft follows Sarah, played by Robin Tooney, who moves to a new town and meets a trio of outcast teenage girls led by Nancy, played by Fruza Ball. Sarah and Nancy, along with Bonnie, played by Neve Campbell, and Rochelle, played by Rachel True, form a coven and begin working magic. Each girl faces their own problems. Sarah is rejected and slut-shamed by popular jock Chris. Bonnie has burn scars on her body. Nancy is poor and lives in a hostile home. And Rochelle is dealing with a racist bully. To deal with these issues, Sarah casts a love spell on Chris. Nancy causes her abusive father to have a heart attack and die, which leads to a massive life insurance payout for her and her mother. Rochelle causes her racist bully to lose all her hair, and Bonnie's scars disappear. Obsessed with power, Nancy begins to spiral out of control, and Sarah must tap into her own power to stop her. Mahalik, what is your history with The Craft?
Ooh, this is an interesting one, because I feel like it's a movie I've put off for so long. And I remember talking to you about it too, like, oh, maybe it's one we can do in the future and stuff. And I remember seeing it a lot, like on 2014, like, Tumblr aesthetic, when I said Tumblr, I was super into Tumblr, when I was just, like, being a pretentious teenager, like, I know a lot, I know about music and movies, like, I didn't know anything, so it always used to come up on my timeline, I'm like, wow, The Craft, so cool, and then that scene where, like, they're at the, they get off the bus, and the bus driver's like, beware, and they're like, or we're the ones to be, like, we're the ones to be scared of, or, like, people should be scared of, whatever, I was like,
yeah, wow. We're the weirdos.
They were the weirdos, and I was like, wow, classic. That's amazing, yeah. Right? And then, yeah, finally watching it recently, I just thought it was really interesting for a film that came out in, like, in 96, just because it is, like, for women who are, like, really feelingly empowered through witchcraft, but also, like, the different elements of, yeah, classism and racism that play into it, even with Bonnie's situation where, like, she has, like, those scars and stuff like that, which I think is interesting in the sense of just, like, thinking about the ways that we see scarring as a bad thing, where, like, that's something she could have lived with her entire life and could have been accepted, and there's, like, there's people I know now who do, like, activist work around that and, like, accepting those type of things, so it's interesting how, like, it kind of it not propels different, like, time, but, like, there's different elements of each character where, like, this is would not have, like, happen back then, mm-hmm. like, it wouldn't happen now, and maybe would to a certain extent depending on what your environment is and stuff, but mm-hmm. overall the film is just, like, there's definitely cringy moments where I'm like, ooh, bad, but also good, because I get to, like, think about it and be critical about it, mm-hmm. and then just, like, yeah, so many different elements of just the film where I'm just, like, thoroughly confused, but also, like, oh, I just love seeing girls, like, do witchcraft, because it's, like, a thing, like, so fun, I'm just, like, oh, what if I could just, like, you know, like, make someone's eyebrows disappear, like, that would be fun, or just, like, make some, like, you know, if I could just, like, fly away, like, that would be so great, but
yeah,
there's definitely witchcraft that there's elements of it, but I'm, like, I want the, like, dramatic, I want the full levitating energy, which I won't have, probably, mm-hmm. but
I mean, who knows?
Who knows?
I think anyone can be a teen witch. That's my stand. Anyone, yeah. yeah, I remember seeing parts of The Craft on television, and being really scared, like, specifically Chris's death scene. But I don't think I watched the full movie until I was in my late teens and early 20s. And, like, maybe I was a bit too old because I feel like it didn't resonate with me as, like, the same way that as, like, other audiences. I do think it's, like, very influential and a culturally important film and aesthetically. But yeah, it's just not my favorite. I was really excited for the rewatch for the show.
Yeah.
And yeah, we'll get into that, like, a little bit later on, but I feel like the filmmakers were just not on the Coven's side in a kind of frustrating way. And, like, I feel like the perfect 1996 cast and grungy girl power aesthetic was completely squandered on a plot about girls fighting, which is so frustrating.
It's just like, you want happy ending, or, like, we love each other, we love witchcraft, you know, we're in it together, but it's, like, especially when it's made by, like men, it's, like, oh, of course we want girls fighting, right? I feel like if it was made by women, or, like, folks who are not cis men, like, that would change the entire dynamic in terms of how they interact with one another, mm-hmm. and how they see power, and especially with Nancy's obsession with being, like, the powerful witch, mm-hmm. you know, and, like, only, like, that hierarchical aspect of, like, she's at the top, and like, girls fighting, just not cute. Like, it's definitely very 90s.
Yeah.
Like, early 2000s, thinking about, like, Mean Girls and stuff like that, too. Yeah. It's, like, it's a very typical thing that's, like, a plot in a lot of movies that are all women. But something, I feel like it's something that has, like, fortunately enough, we've outgrown of, like, outgrow mm-hmm. it to a certain extent. We're, like, mm-hmm. there's definitely, like, girls fighting in certain films, like, even TV shows and stuff, but not, like, the whole plot, where it's, like, it shouldn't be the whole plot. Like,
no.
If the entire plot fighting with people, specifically other women, it's like, you don't have much to really dive into, I feel like, to a certain extent.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, like, yeah, like I said, we'll get into a little bit more, but, like, especially dealing with all, like, the structural obstacles that these girls have to confront, and then it just, like, devolves into girls fighting. Like, I don't know, maybe I'm expecting too much from, like, a 1996, like, teen witch movie, but, like, why didn't they challenge anything structurally? I don't know.
It's, like, questions we ask them, like, you know, 20 years plus, why? Why did you choose girls fighting when there's, like, racism issues, classism, you know, body issues, mm-hmm. you know,
like, sexual assault, and, like,
yeah, a full sexual assault, you know, like, the obsessiveness, like, how men are obsessive over women sometimes in certain situations, right? And, like, those were, like, small elements to the entire movie, which mm-hmm. is, like, huge issues mm-hmm. that, like, I feel like take up entire plots in movies and TV shows now, but for, like, the 90s, maybe it wasn't seen as, like, an important thing, or, like, mm-hmm. these are important issues that should be talked about to a a wider way, but I feel like maybe it wouldn't be as a teen. It wouldn't be appealing for teenagers if they're watching stuff about race and more class and more sexual assault. Then it becomes like this maybe like adult movie. But then even then, it's like teenagers do experience sexual assault and racism and classism. So it's like, why are we trying to dumb things? Not, I'm not going to say the word dumb things down, but why are we trying to minimize a teenager experience to an extent? Yeah. You know?
Yeah, that, and that's why I feel like the filmmakers are just, it seems kind of cynical.
Yeah.
So I have a quote here from an essay called We Are the Weirdos, Mister, The Craft and the Year of the Teen Witch by Sinead Stebbins for the AV Club. 1986 was the year of the Teen Witch. Sabrina the Teenage Witch debuted on ABC in September, and Nicholas Heitner's film adaptation of The Crucible was released a few months later. The enduring appeal of the craft and the idea of the teen witch more generally can be attributed to a fantasy of supreme female agency. It suggests there's an unknowable mystery and dormant threat inside teenage girls that the rest of the world can't possibly comprehend. The craft allows viewers to imagine having control over and taking revenge on a restrictive, male-dominated world. The teen witch doesn't reject the teen girl experience. If anything, the trope embraces the strange magic and intensity of female friendship. It challenges a society that both limits the power of young women and perceives them to be naturally limited. By having supernatural strength, these characters can defy a social structure that equates female adolescence with weakness and vulnerability. I just want to talk a little bit about witches in film, kind of more generally. I've covered a few witch films for the show, such as Blair Witch Project, Suspiria, and The Love Witch, which are all very different witches stylistically and like different kind of style of witches. And I think like a general, like a sort of like common theme of those films is that there's like, that witches represent the desire for and fear of female power. And I have a quote here from Alex West's book, The 1990s Teen Horror Cycle, Final Girls in a New Hollywood Formula. And she writes of the craft, the figure of the witch reflects and refracts the concerns of the time in regards to women and women's places in the world. The craft illuminates that the same fears and anger towards women which caused the widespread witch hunts in Europe is still present in the modern era. So Mahalik, how do you see witches in film, and what do you think witches represent in film generally?
Interesting. I think just for myself, like I've always seen witches like in movies are like really powerful and like go above and beyond in terms of like reimagining ourselves too and like what we're capable of. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes always it's like witches are evil, they're the worst, or like, you know, like a bitch, you know, like those type of stuff. So it's like interesting to see like how the narrative of witches on TV or like in films have changed over the last like decade or two. Mm-hmm. Like, so I'm thinking of like American Horror Story, mm-hmm. and thinking of like the Coven season, like that was probably one of my favorite seasons ever, just because they were all like Gabrielle Sidibe was a witch, you know, and like that was really powerful to see like this black woman be a witch, and they were fighting each other too, but I feel like there was moments of like girlhood to a certain extent, and there was a sense of community with each other, even though they're all trying to fight for power and try to be like, the best witch possible, because I think it's something that weirdly enough we can't escape, this idea of like being like the best of the best and like wanting to like have all the power and have all the access to everything, because it's just like it feeds your ego to a certain extent, and like the more power you have, the more things you have access to, you can like heal people, or you can like, you know, wish the worst on your enemy on your enemies, and you know, do all the like quote-unquote bad things or whatever. But I feel like witches are super powerful, and like only I think after watching The Craft and just like I think a video on Vice I watched too, it's like the different like communities of witches across the world, but specifically in the States, and like black witches specifically, and like also women of color as well, and just like how that gives people a sense of community with each other. Like they're not like these weirdos, like these freaks, or like freaks or whatever people see them as. And I think it helps that like all those different films are about witches from like the 90s and 80s and 70s and before then and up until now. It gives people a sense of like it's actually a place of like a possibility for people to be witches and to like really feel good about it and not feel like it's like this weird niche thing when it's like actually very normalized. And like it kind of almost ties into like I feel like astrology to a certain extent. Maybe I'm completely wrong, but just even thinking about like Rochelle, but like in real life, I don't know her name right now, but she's actually
Rachel True.
Yeah, and she's like watching that video, and she's into like astrology and she does readings and stuff like that. So I feel like it does a bit of magic and like witchcraft to a certain extent. But yeah, I hope that makes sense. I'm just like, I'm going on a tangent about things, but I'm like, that makes sense. You know, witches are powerful, and like I love Like, I like the, I think I dressed up as a witch. Definitely, did I dress up as a witch for Halloween? There was definitely one point in my life when I was a kid, I dressed up as a witch, like a huge witch hat and like long black like dress. I'm like, ooh, I can make power. I have powers and like trying to move stuff. I'm like, obviously you can't move stuff, Mahali. You are 9 years old. Like, you're not gonna do that.
Did you ever do like other like witchy shit, like seances or like lettuce feather stuff as a board, like that type of stuff?
Oh, I remember trying to make my, like, this is not really witch stuff, but, like, one of those, like, those Ouija boards. I tried to make my friends do it with me in high school. They were too scared. I was like, you guys are annoying. Like, this is fun. Like, we're going to call a spirit. Like, come on. And, like, no. And I'm like, okay, I'll do it by myself, I guess. Yeah. Like, in my room. But, like, I feel like I've never done any type of seance and stuff like that. But definitely, it interests me that people really put, like, a lot of energy and power into it. Mm. And, like, they get something out of it, too. Which I think feeds people to a certain extent, but I wish.
I definitely did like with like childhood friends, like did like played with a Ouija board, tried to like do seances and just like just creepy, you know, girl stuff.
Girl stuff, quirky, creepy girl stuff.
So the film does have a connection to third wave feminism. I have a quote here from The Rogue Runway from an essay called "The Craft Embodied the 90s Third Wave Feminism. Will the Craft Legacy do the same for young fourth wave feminists?" The same decade which saw actresses Fairuza Balk, Robin Tooney, and Neve Campbell and Rachel True conjure in one of Roger Ebert's least favorite witch stories also saw the creation of third wave feminism. Inspired by the unfinished business of the second wave and the rise in right-wing Reagan-endorsed Christian politics, young women gathered together in a new and more inclusive ways, seeking rights, power, and representation surrounding beauty, sexuality, femininity, and masculinity. No longer looking to shake things up from within pre-approved establishments, third wave feminists took to music, underground scenes, and alternative media channels. Riot Girls, third wave punk feminists that combined music, politics, and human rights seemed to vein with which most closely inspired the chaotic, powerful punk witches in the Craft. Although boistered by feminism and released amongst this movement, the film's writers, its director, and cinematographer and editor, and one of the three producers of the film are men. Men's representations of women stemming from a male gaze mindset can never be fully accurate. And I think the last point kind of like is the reason why the film feels kind of empty. Like the Craft capitalized off of like youth culture and grunge aesthetic, yet the story reinforces dominant culture. Do you know what I mean? And like, which you kind of mentioned before, like the focus on each individual girl's issue rather than sort of bigger structural problems, which kind of, I don't know, that's like trivializes their like real world problems as kind of like petty drama.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting that it's made, mostly made by men. And I think that is like, as we all know, it's like, especially you're talking about women are a certain type of experience, it doesn't make sense to have those people write those stories, because then it's gonna be inaccurate, and like they're only doing it through like their experiences with around other women or asking other women, and we don't even know if they like talked to a bunch of like teenage girls and did like a whole thing, right? And like it would have been I think entirely different film if it was made, or at least like bare minimum produced by a woman, and like if her experiences also came from a place of being like low income or have issues around her body or like being like, or was bullied as a teenager and stuff like that too, right? I think sometimes we also like say like, oh, it's also a woman there, but she was like rich, you know, especially attractive, and I'm like, no, like it's not still it.
You
like,
don't have any problems.
You have no problem. You know, like, we need someone, like we don't want to wish anything upon people obviously, but like, if you're going to talk about a certain story, obviously you want to come from a place of realistic background, and like if the bare minimum is a woman, but a woman with no actual like experience in her life that feed into the story, it still becomes really bland, and then it becomes just like this like fictional thing that's supposed to set the precedent for like a teenage experience, right? Like, in the 90s as like a girl who's like kind of like different and feels out of place, because I feel like a lot of girls probably felt seen to a certain extent with this film. I feel like, oh, I'm like a little bit of a freak or like a weirdo or whatever, quote unquote, what they've called themselves in the film. But at the same time, too, it's a little bit disingenuous when it's not coming from the actual people that experience those type of things. And it just feels something's weird. It's like, why do men make, like, teenage girl film. It's like, what? Like, where, yeah. Where are you coming from? Like, yeah, what?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, like, because of, like, the filmmaker's sort of, like, limited experience with, like, teenage girlhood, like, the film kind of devolves, or just, I don't know, it just raises, like, fear of teenage girls having agency.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And, like, I just love this power fantasy of, like, racists going bald and rapists getting thrown out windows, but, like, instead, in the film, like, the witches are vanquished and order is restored, and Sarah is a narc. That yeah. character is so frustrating.
From the beginning, I'm like, oh, you don't want her. Like, yeah. she's annoying. She's having yeah. to tell on you. Like, don't bring her into your little group. But I guess she has the powers and all the things.
Yeah, she's the good one. Yeah.
She's a good witch, and she's the one who will think more clearly or whatever. But it's just, like, her character is frustrating to watch because she is, like, yeah, this narc who doesn't want to, like, really... There's moments of her you can kind of see her opening up and kind of being a little bit more, like, flexible mm-hmm. and more free to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, the agency for all of them is completely gone. It's frustrating because, like, girls are allowed to be really angry and kind of sit in that anger, especially when you're a teenage girl, like, all the hormones. I remember my teenage years. Oh, my God. I was the worst to my family. Like, I was annoying.
That's what you're supposed to do that. You're supposed to be the worst.
Right? And, like, I feel like that's not normalized enough. Like, teenage mm-hmm. girls are not even allowed to still be hormonal and be terrible and be rude. And, like, when you're going through all the things and you're experiencing, like, life and boys and girls and, like, mm-hmm. ooh, am I queer? Am I this? I don't know. And, like, with this film, it's, like, they weren't really able to explore all that anger, and they were told, like, well, you have to forgive people, and you have to, like, in this, you have not even forgive people, but you have to, like, understand where they're coming from, even though you're completely angry, and the other person hasn't made amends with you. Specifically, I'm thinking about Rochelle, right? Like, mm-hmm. you shouldn't feel bad for the fact that the girl's hair went bald, like, she went bald, because she called her, like, a negroid. Like, yeah. that's a full slur, you know? It's, like, mm-hmm. I mean, not full, it's not a slur, it's, like, close to the slur, it's pretty close,
you know? And, yeah.
Like, why she made to feel bad about this when it's like the girl hasn't even made amends with her to a certain extent. She only asks, like, how are you, with her, like, really cheap, like, crusty party stuff wig. I was like, how
yeah,
are you?
Yeah, yeah, this isn't like a journey. Like, no one's really learned a lesson.
No, there's
like
no
the
journey.
Racist girl hasn't learned a lesson yet. She's like afraid of Rochelle now.
Exactly. And like, that's that what, like, fear is okay, she's afraid of her now, but like, there isn't, she hasn't learned anything. She's still the exact same person. And that's how you can just tell too, like, the lack of just like understanding about even racial issues with girls specifically too, because you are taught, like, you're also a woman, and then also on top of that, you're also, like, not white. You're okay, do I forgive people? Do I be nice about racist encounters? Like, we're told to, like, you know, be nice about it, even if someone's rude to you and racist towards you because you're a girl. And it's like, no, I can be hella mean back because I'm like, this is mean and racist. What? Like, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it is weird how it, like, feeds into that, like, stereotype of the person being oppressed having to be, like, the better person.
Yeah, the bigger person.
The bigger person, like, yeah.
I don't want to be the bigger person. Sometimes I want to be the petty person. Sometimes yeah. I want to just, you know, I don't want to grow right now, okay? I want to be immature for, like, 5 minutes, because sometimes we're allowed to be immature. Young Black girls should be allowed to just be angry about it and just be like, oh, well, yep, I'm angry about this. See you never. Like, I want to talk to you, you know? But
yeah, and, like, instead of exploring that, like, they just kind of, like, they made the conflict within the friend group.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I also came across a deleted scene which features a confrontation between Sarah, Rochelle, Bonnie, and Nancy. And I feel like it kind of, like, explains their dynamic and character motivations a little bit better. So in the scene, Sarah, Rochelle, and Bonnie are talking about how Nancy's out of control and that maybe they should do a binding spell against her. And then comparing Nancy's like lust for power as addiction. Nancy overhears them and starts to berate the three girls, stating that she was only their friend. She was their only friend because Rochelle is the only Black girl in an all-white neighborhood, and that Bonnie was a freak.
It's called a binding. It's to stop another from performing harm against other people and oneself.
She'd be pissed.
We're not gonna tell her.
Yeah.
You guys can't tell me that you haven't seen anything different about her. She's completely lost it. All we have to do is take a picture of her and wrap a white ribbon around
it. It says it can backfire.
I think we should take a chance. Thought we weren't supposed to practice magic on each other, ladies. I'm sorry, I'm just worried about you.
Worried? Worried? I'm so touched.
You just seem a little out of control.
Out of control?
Yeah, Nancy. Maybe you need to see someone. I mean, professional. I mean, Nancy, I think it's totally possible that you could get hooked to the craft, just like alcohol, the food. It's like those middle-aged women on Sally, Jesse, who just can't stop redecorating their houses, and they just decorate, and they just keep buying and buying.
You just shut up! I have saved you all from oblivion! Can you see that? When I met you, no one could even talk to you. Only black girl in a white neighborhood. Do you remember that? Wasn't so long ago now, was it? Even you. Look at you. Now that you're all beautiful and perfect, you think everything's just hunky-dory. Well, it's not. When I met you, no one could even stand the sight of you. Because you were a disgusting freak. And I can take you back there, and don't you doubt that. I leave you alone for 2 minutes with her. And what do? You turn your backs on me, just like everybody else has ever done. And you. I only have one thing to say to you. Don't you ever screw with me!
Fine. That's it.
Walk away! You run away! Run away, little girl! Run home to mommy! She'll make it better!
I just wish they had kept the scene in as it expands the abusive group dynamic and sort of like also like the racist microaggressions that Rochelle probably experiences.
Yeah.
But also sort of explains like why Rochelle and Bonnie suddenly turn on Sarah.
I think it's interesting because I remember watching an interview too of like, I can't remember her name, but Rochelle's character in real life, whatever her real name is.
Rachel True.
Rachel True, Rochelle, Rachel. So close. Oh my gosh. But even her saying like in the interview, like, yeah, like this character wasn't even meant to be like a black girl. She was just meant to be bulimic and white. And I think that plays into it a lot in the sense where like the fact that they made that scene, which would have been amazing to see that scene where like, yeah, there is within friend groups, there is like a microaggression. There is like that like tension, which does happen and it's normal when you're friends with a bunch of other girls who experience other things within that friend group and then have to like deal with it together and how you support one another when like there's moments of you just like not be able to fulfill those relationships sometimes because your own stuff you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. And that would have been really realistic for a lot of young girls, I think, just because that does happen in friend groups when you're all teenagers and you're all like experiencing different stuff. But I think on top of the fact that like they didn't even see this character even being black, it just shows like the laziness and the carelessness around it too. They're like, well, it's not necessary to show that, and like it would have been a huge aspect to the film where it's like if you're gonna include a character who is not white and have like the whole storyline be around for that specific person being around like their race, it has to be more intentional and it has to be more thought out. And you just can't like slap it on because it's 1996 and we have to be, you know, up with the times. And it's like it would have just been better in the sense if she was just a white character with bulimia. Well, on top of that, she could have been a black girl with bulimia. Like that would have been very interesting. And like that's like I feel like to a certain extent you only see those type of films anyway with like black girls with multiple identities in terms of just like her race, right? Because there are other people with other things on top of just like what they look like. But yeah, I think it's interesting that like, that scene should have been in the movie because that's interesting. Like that's so interesting. Like Nancy being like, well,
like, I'm like Nancy also being racist towards like her friend.
Yeah. Exactly, right? Because it is realistic. And like if the people on the outside are not the only people who are going to be racist, the people within your own friend group are racist too.
Yeah, it's not going to be like just this one mean girl. Like it's going to be like other people, it's going to manifest in other ways, right? I have a quote from a Toronto Star Review by Carol Corbet from around the time that the film was released that I think sort of like encapsulates like my issue with the film. So the story of The Craft fails to be exhilarating because the enemy is not properly located. And I think, like what you said about how this racism or these issues, it's not going to be just one person.
Girls, watch out for those weirdos.
We are the weirdos, mister. let's talk about the craft. I love how you say in the book, like, some actors don't love talking about their past roles, but you love talking about the craft.
It's a big movie in terms of my career, but it's also a big movie for Black people out there. The Craft, which came out before Scream, before all those things, and we had a main Black character, which is why I fight to get mentioned in billing, you know, sometimes. It's less about me, Rachel True. It's not about that. It's about all the Black girls coming up, or boys, or whoever, and young actors coming up, because when they put up a poster of the four of us, mention the three girls, and then skip down the call sheet, I think this is how Black actors get underpaid. This is how they get forgotten. And it's part of why I mouthed off about the publicity back in the day that I was excluded from, which wouldn't happen today.
And what's so interesting is Rochelle was originally written for a white actress.
And I told her, like, you're white, honey, just deal with it.
And then you came on, you auditioned, you made it your own, and they added, apparently, the racial element to the story because of you.
When I was cast in it, I remember seeing the new script and thinking, Rochelle was bulimic to begin with. That was my original audition. Then they turned it to racism. And I remember thinking, this is my young brain, not my adult brain, thinking, do they see Blackness as a problem? But, you know, once I really thought about it when I got older, I thought, no, it's really good they had it in there.
Oh, God, look, there is a pubic hair in my brush. Oh, no, wait. That's just one of Rochelle's little nappy hairs.
The Christine Taylor role, which is sort of your main antagonist in it, she uses some really racially charged language. I wonder if it was harsher originally. How do they sort of deal with that character as your obstacle?
I think they don't ever say the N word with a hard R.
Because I don't like Negroids.
I feel like that was always the language, to be honest. You know, it wasn't the first time someone called my hair pubic hair. That's the truth. So to have that in the movie was, you know, fitting, I think, as far as how people think.
The great scene with Christine Taylor is when her hair is coming out in the shower looking at her. What do you remember about shooting that and how they did that?
But I do remember about deciding how to play that scene, because I wanted to play it more torn than Glee. Could have been Glee, but I think my choice was, oh God, I've realized I've done to them what they were doing to me. And because I know how that feels, being Black, I have mixed emotions about it, rather than just like, woohoo, it's great.
So kind of like to build on the Rochelle character, I have another quote here from an essay by Ashley Blackwell, from the writer of Graveyard Shift Sisters. It's an essay called 20 Years of the Craft, Why We Needed More of Rochelle. Unfortunately, Rochelle's score to Settle was not explored and displayed enough with the emotional weight it carried. It was played as superficial comeuppance for Laura's racial intolerance. Laura is the white racist bully. A spell was cast on her to lose what she had, what we are to assume was one of Laura's most cherished assets and core self-worth, her hair. But it is interesting how her straight blonde locks are a symbol of itself in an idolized status of social capital, supposed racial superiority and prosperity. It is interesting how Rochelle makes a sweeping statement, so one so quick, sneaky, and easily missed, amongst her friends about a spell to make me blonde. I picked up on that 20 years ago, and it's still so apparent to the damage that these experiences inflict on women of color. These are the pieces to Rochelle we could never fully put together because the entire mold was never assembled. What's missing is such more than the craft could explore in its runtime.
That's super interesting.
Mm-hmm. I remember the point that I was trying to make. But this film kind of like suffers from like 90s color blindness, while also trying to make a comment on racism.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like it's trying to have it both ways.
It's, and you sometimes can't in a weird way, like unless you do it really, 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 really well. And like it has to be a lot of thought put into it for one to try to tackle both issues. But I feel like the fact that it's May 96 and maybe it's a time where like, I'm trying to think of other films that came out that time where it's like, were there other films at the time where like, we're kind of addressing race? When did Do the Right Thing come out? When did that film come out? I'm trying to think. Well, like, I feel like if there's other films around that time.
Oh, 1989. So, yeah, much earlier.
Okay. So I wonder, I'm thinking about, like, if sometimes people rush certain storylines in the films because they feel like they have to fulfill that gap that's happening, mm-hmm. and they don't want to be seen as, like, oh, we're terrible, like, and racist. Especially talking about, like, a teenage girl experience, and how do you not include one Black girl or one girl who's not white mm-hmm. about her experiences, right? And like when they do it like in a really sloppy way, and then it becomes like this thing where like it's interestingly enough we can like be able to dissect it 20 years plus, like in this essay, right, where she's able to like think about it more deeply and like how it impacted like the writer at the time when she saw it when she was a teenager or like a young person, and then as an adult. And I think that's what kind of makes it unfortunately, like, interesting and fun to kind of dissect it, because, like, well, now we can reflect as to why those storylines were added in so, like not intentionally enough, mm-hmm. and how we can make sure that, like, in the future when people make films about a teenage experience or, like, any type of experience, you want to include Black women into it or Black girls, you have to be very strategic about it and think about, like, how this will impact other people when they see it. And even thinking, too, it's, like, what was their audience in terms of this film? Did they expect other just, like, white girls to like it? Like, oh, I'm learning about racism today. Or is it actually for the other Black girls? Like, oh, I can also be a witch and I can also have these, like, thoughts and all these dreams and fantasies, right? And, like, I just wonder, yeah, what was their sense of, like, audience members? Like, do they want it to be this one specific person or, like, this group of people? Were they even thinking about other Black girls as being, like, a potential, like, audience and, like, yeah, casting?
Yeah, I mean, like, I kind of don't think so, just based on, like, the other films that were kind of in that horror cycle. Like, I think Rochelle is, like, one of the only sort of main Black characters.
Yeah.
Kind of that time. Yeah, I don't know, like, what it's, I mean, it's impossible to know, like, what the filmmakers' intentions were with either, yeah, like, what sort of audience they saw seeing the film, or, like, yeah, what were they trying to say about all these sort of, like, big issues that they're bringing up.
Yeah, it's almost like they were trying to set, like, the precedent, and they kind of weirdly did, but then also, like, whoa, flop 20 years later. Like, it didn't work. Like, not 20 years later, maybe, like, a strong 10. Like,
yeah,
not it. But, like, at the time, ooh, different. Like, yeah, you know?
But now I think, it's like, yeah. Like, have you seen the original Candyman film?
Oh, no. I need to watch it. And then when the new Candyman comes out, I need to compare.
Double feature. But that film also talks about race, but in a very, like, 1992 way, so it's, like, still kind of messy, but it's, like, such an early 90s horror film talking about something that's very, like, serious and, like, yeah, so it's, like, oh, these films are trying, but they're, like, written and directed by white dudes, so they, you know, reading about race is only going to get you so far.
Yeah, and also with horror, it's completely different, right? It's, like, other genres, it's almost easier to talk about race and do in a very, like, simplistic way. But with horror, it's, like, it's interesting because it's, like, it's not that hard because it's been Black horror movies or, like, even horror movies that touch up on race. And thinking about Get Out now and how that's become, like, the precedent of, like, horror movies talking about race, like, the top of the top tier, right? And it's, like, it's almost like this code you have to, like, kind of figure out how do you add race into a horror film when, like, it's very, like, obvious, like, racism is horror, right? Mm-hmm. It's, like, it is, like, you know, Rochelle being called all these slurs is her worst nightmare, right? And, like, them not even realizing, like, it's good to, like, kind of mention those things, but not even fully do it properly. It's, like, oh, you missed an entire opportunity to talk about something even more deeper, like, and even, like, even classism, that's, like, that's, you know, that's horrible, too, like, you know, that's, like, that's horror, like, these are horror, like, thinking about not having security, those are, like, you can have nightmares, those type of stuff. So I feel like they try to touch on certain things that were made to be almost, like, they are scary issues, but they could have been way more, like, better about it, I feel like, to a certain extent.
Worked out.
Yeah, way worked out, but it's so interesting, like, I think the entire time, like, are we completely shooting on this film right now? No.
Yeah.
But, also, fashion, 10 out of 10.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Okay. So, yeah, another messy aspect of the film is the sexual assault that's portrayed. So, portrays an attempted rape, which is very rare in film kind of generally, but specifically teen films. It's just messy how they go about it. So after Sarah puts Chris under a love spell, he quickly becomes obsessive and really scary and eventually assaulting her while they're on a date. This could imply that Sarah is asking for it because she casts a love spell. And then Nancy gets revenge on Chris by glamoring herself to look like Sarah and throwing him out a window at a party. However, Nancy is also kind of, like, framed as being jealous of Sarah or is seeking revenge on Chris because he rejected her initially. I don't know. But then she gives, like, this awesome speech before she throws him out a window. I don't know. I just, like, again, I'm not sure what the intention is. And, like, yeah. What do you think about that storyline?
Yeah, like, I think I watched that clip just a couple days ago again of, like, that scene specifically. And it's an amazing scene. Like, the speech is amazing, like, the way it's shot and, like, how Nancy is not, I don't think she, like, I don't really believe she's trying to get revenge just because he, like, rejected her. Mm-hmm. I think it's because, like, she sees the behavior that he does and she's not happy with it. And not just only herself, with other girls, and just, like, the whole idea of, like, these jock boys in high school that just, like, completely just manipulate girls and are not, like, you know, conscious of their behavior and the way that he treated Sarah and, like, all this different thing. It's, like, no, it's never really about themselves. It's always about seeing, like, how these, like, how specifically this character, this guy, like, treat other women too. So I think it's her way of, like, not just getting back at him for herself, but for the other girls that he's treated terribly. And, like, this larger conversation around, like, boys need to be better, and, like, they need to be taught, you know, certain things around, like, how do you treat women and how to, like, go on dates and not, you know, be gross and whatever, right? And it's kind of a film that you kind of see that she's able to kind of, like, vocalize that in a way that comes across as, like, jealous and weird and, like, revenge, but it's, like, mm-hmm. it isn't. If you think really, if you really think deeply about it, it's mm-hmm. her of being, like, enough is enough, and I'm not gonna take it anymore because, you know, like, this is something that happens in real life. It's just, mm-hmm. it's contradicting because, yeah, her speech is so amazing, and you wonder who wrote that speech. Mm-hmm. But then, like, the whole context, because, like, oh, she went out with him, or he wasn't nice to her, so it's, like, mm-hmm. what was... It's confusing. It's so confusing.
You're like, oh, her motivation for that is, like,
yeah,
confusing in, like, the context of the larger narrative, but in that specific scene, it's just, like, yes, it's so, like, vindicate. I don't know, it's just so awesome. I just like revenge in movies. But then, like, and then she's, like, the villain after that.
Yeah, it's, like, oh, I, like, love Nancy's character, because just, like, I like her, like, I think that they picked a very interesting person to play her, and, like, mm-hmm. just her whole, like, she has an interesting, like, face and interesting, like just, like, the way she played that character really, really well.
Yeah.
So well. And it's just unfortunate that she's seen as, like, this villain and this evil person, but she's also suffering, and she's also trying mm-hmm. to find, like, a person that has had no access to power her entire life because of her, like, home situation, having issues of being, like, low income. It's, like, this is her one chance of accessing power, and she's seen as, like, this completely terrible person, with not realizing that she's actually really hurt and traumatized. And, like, this could have been a way for, like, for the girls to realize, oh, she's actually hurting, and she's hurting, which they kind of did, kind of, like, very minimally, I think, to mm-hmm. a certain extent. But we're just like, oh, she's evil and she wants to get rid of us and blah blah. But it's like, no, she actually just kind of needs this, because, like, this mm-hmm. is, like, her one big win, you know, like, to have all the power, to feel all the things, and to, like, access to all the different things which she never had access to before. So mm-hmm. it sucks at the end that she's not well, unfortunately. And it's I'm like, oh, this could have ended better, maybe. Like, they all could have went their separate ways, and, like, we respect each other, but I'm gonna be a witch, you know. But they didn't, and I'm like, what, why?
It's just mean girls.
Mean girls.
You're a witch. They were right.
They usually are.
Nancy, come on, get off the bed, let's go.
She's a witch too, you know. I mean, the only reason you're in love with her is because she cast a spell on you.
No.
Yes, sad but true. That's why I'm here, to help you forget about
her. What do you care?
Nancy, get off the bed. Look, you scared the shit out of him. Thank you very much, let's go.
No, he's gotta pay.
You're just jealous.
Jealous? Jealous? You don't even exist to me!
You don't even exist. You are nothing. You are shit. You don't exist. The only way you know how to treat women is by treating them like whores! When you're the whore! And that's gonna stop!
I'm sorry.
He's sorry. Oh, he's sorry. He's sorry. He's sorry. He's sorry. He's sorry. He's sorry. Sorry,
Mom! Okay. I would just want to talk a little bit about the witchcraft that is portrayed, and you did kind of mention it earlier, but apparently they had on set Wicca consultants. I didn't realize that was a thing. But yeah, the film still has like their idea of witchcraft is very similar to patriarchal sort of Christian sentiments. It's very white. The concept of do unto others as you would have them do unto you, and Manon, which is a made-up deity that the characters refer to as he. So it is, again, just kind of like this limited view.
Yeah, it's very limited. It isn't. I feel like with spirituality and witchcraft and stuff like that, it should be like more freer to a certain extent and more open-minded. Where I feel like it was very like cut and dry. Like, this is the way you do it. If you don't do this way, you're like a terrible person. Like even seeing that, like the way like they portrayed Nancy, like that shouldn't have been the real. Like it shouldn't have been like that way in that sense. Just like this, yeah, like that whole sense of just like someone does something bad, they're a terrible person, they should be banished forever. And it's like, no, like I feel like with witchcraft or like spirituality, there's room for like within those circles, like specifically, like not maybe outsiders, but like within those things, like there's room for forgiveness and there's room for like growing and learning, whatever. And it is like a weird patriarchal version of like witchcraft where it's like, who made this up? Like Manu, yeah. Who you made this fake deity, but also it's also like a man, I guess. Isn't as Manu a man? So it's like,
yeah, they refer to Manu as he.
Yeah, so it's interesting too. It's like these like women witches, and their deity is a man. Realistically, I feel like that wouldn't be a thing. And like even the woman that works like that witchcraft store is like a woman and stuff. But even then, she even seems like very like limited in terms of just like, oh, don't read that book, don't do this. But it's like where it's like it should be more open to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. I would feel, but maybe that's like a very 90s version of witchcraft.
Yeah, totally. All right, should we talk a little bit about the remake? Craft Legacy, I will say, I haven't actually seen it yet, so maybe I just like shouldn't even be talking about it, but here we are. I feel like from like what I've seen of the Craft Legacy, they are trying to overcompensate for the missteps of the 1996 version, which is kind of like, deals with racism, kind of. Deals with misogyny, kind of. Deals with classism, kind of. And then to make up for those missteps, they've just like wokeified this 90s property, which seems very annoying. But it's also like made for teens, and I'm like an old hag, so like it's like not for me, which is fine. If like young people like it, then that's great.
I feel all these remakes, it's so weird because I'm just like, who actually wanted these? Like, who was asking for a remake? Was it young people? Was it people who like watched it back then and they need the nostalgia again? But even then, when people make remakes, they're never as good as the original, because they like, I really truly believe like some things like live in its time for a reason. Like it lives and exists in that year, or in, like in those 5 years or 10 years, however like long like a TV show lasts or a movie lasts, like that should just live in that time. It should never come back. It's like you can't remake it the same way, because like, yeah, people definitely do try to overcompensate for the 90s, early 2000s, even like 5 years ago, because language changes so much, and like the way we see things, like the threshold for racism or classism or misogyny or like homophobia and transphobia obviously have changed in the last like decade and more. But like when you try to overly compensate, it just comes across as really hella corny. It just like looks just so bad, and you're just like, why is this a thing? So with the Craft, it's like that should just existed in that time. Or if they're gonna remake it as they did, it should just be it should be like racism that is relevant now rather than racism that was relevant back then, because the racism that exists in the 90s is the exact same that's happening now, but it's like manifested in different ways. Mm-hmm. And classism and misogyny and like sexual assault has like completely changed like in the last like decade, and how we see assault and how we see like abusers and like rape and stuff like that too. It's like it's completely changed. So it's like it has to be able to do it in a way that's intentional and really strategic, and how it makes sense to teenagers now. Because if you're talking about rape or like racism in the 90s, it's not gonna make sense for a someone who's 15 now. It's like their view of racism is gonna be completely different, even the way like I see racism or like you saw racism, right? And it's just like annoying, because you know, I was talking before about like my issue with Gossip Girl. If I get hate for this, come for me, come in my DMs and have this conversation.
Valhalla's canceled.
Yeah, like if my criticism of the new Gossip Girl is straight up hate, but also like love for it in a weird way. But like it's just like that, even with that, it's like Gossip Girl lived in a time in 2007 to 2000 whatever, and like it exists in that time for a reason. To see rich white kids be mean to each other. And you're like, it was definitely like terrible. And like, there was definitely like moments where I'm like, oh, this would never exist now. But I'm like, it should live in that time because it lives in that time. And we can never go back in that time and like have it again. So it's like, you're able to kind of look into this like TV show where like it was terrible, but really good. And they did it a really smart way where they redid it now, where everyone's very beautiful and hot, which I love. But it's just like trying to live in 2021 or 2020. Mm-hmm. When they filmed it, and it's just like, you can't, it's so different the way you see bullying or like the competition within teenage people, like teenagers and stuff in high schools, and even the fact that like, the teachers are like the ones who are being Gossip Girl. It's like, what, like, why did you go to jail? Like, that's so weird. You know? Thinking about remakes in terms of The Craft and other remakes about like teenage life, it's like, it, you don't have to overly compensate because there's no point. There's really no point. Like, in a smart way, you're talking about like, you know, issues of like oppression, just don't do it really lit. People just do like this, I like, oh, don't say that, that's problematic, Sally. And it's like, that's not, that's, that sounds so bad. Like, just cut it. You know? But
I know, it's really, it's weird, it just feels very pandering and like cynical, but not 90s cynical. It's like woke cynicism.
Because people do really well, people can talk about race in very interesting ways, but like when people just do it like in a really like wokeify, like, oh, we're gonna be different, we're gonna, you know, bring it to the, bring the issue to the forefront, it's like so forced. And it's like, I'm rolling my eyes, but I still watch it. Like, I still watch Gossip Girl because I need to keep, I need to see what happens. But even with like other remakes, like I get so completely just turned off by them, because I'm just like, it's okay, just let it die, like just let it, just let it go, it's fine, just let it go. You know?
Okay, so I think that's our show for this week. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you, Mahalit, for talking about The Craft with me finally.
No, that was so much fun. Yeah, I love talking about movies, and The Craft is a really interesting film, which I feel like we can go on for like hours about.
Yeah, definitely. All right, where can people find your work?
You can find me on Instagram at mahlet.c. I post there regularly-ish, and I feel like I post relative about stuff that I'm doing right now. I'm trying to think of anything that's coming up. But I actually can't reveal anything yet, but things soon to come that I'm doing at the moment. But yeah, for now, you can always donate to Justice for Black Lives Winnipeg for our different initiatives. I run a queer Black and Trans Fund that will be reopening again in the fall to give up, to redistribute funds, so that'd be great to have people donate to that. We have a general fund, we have a sex workers fund, we have a mental health fund, we have a bunch of funds, so... Well, many ways to redistribute your money. You know, if you're rich, as we mentioned before, you know, just give it out, you know, make that money rain into the account. That sounds so bad. Thank you. Obviously, we thank you all for your funds. I'm just trying to do it a very, like, casual way.
Yeah, and you can listen to Bikini Drive-In every Sunday at 4 p.m. on CKW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Bikini Drive-In. Thanks again. Thanks. Bye.
Powered by volunteer community involvement, this is CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.